Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
We're back for episode 37 of Digital Divinations. We're slowly creeping up in numbers. It seems like this whole 30s has taken a long time, though.
I mean, not for me. I missed one.
Oh, yeah, that's right? True.
That was the one that you did with...
yeah, you know, that's been one of our most downloaded episodes, too. So I'm really rethinking this whole... co-hosting gig. I don't know.
Oh, well, okay. Well, one of those is me. I had to hear what you talked about while...
yeah, and it was all comics. So I'm thinking maybe that's what we should do is like grab a periodical off the shelf and just talk about it.
We could, or comic adjacent things, right? Like the What If series that Marvel is doing and things like that. So
Yeah. I didn't think you were that into Marvel, are you?
No, I've always been kind of more of a DC person, but with the juggernaut of the movies that have come out, the Marvel movies, you know, a lot of people say, oh, the Marvel movies are just better than the DC ones. I don't know, they've got certainly a different tone, but the Marvel movies have a tone that I can take my kids to usually, and the DC movies do not. And so that means I end up seeing the Marvel movies, you know, earlier and more often. So
yeah, no, that's funny. Now you mentioned that you're going camping coming up now.
Oh, yeah, we're leaving tomorrow, as a matter of fact. Or I guess by the time this comes out, I'll be off camping. Actually, by the time this comes out, maybe we'll even be on our way back. But
well, that's first of all, where are you going?
Oh, man, you got me. It's out. We are going out to the Olympic Peninsula someplace.
Oh, yeah.
And we have a friend who is visiting with her son, who I remember being born, and he's now in his 20s. We have known this friend for a long time. So she's come up with her son, and we're all going to go camping together. And while we're there, another friend of ours and her daughter, who is grown and in college, is going to be sort of in the same area. They've got like a, I think they've got some sort of beach house or something they've rented on the Olympic Peninsula. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be able to stop in and see them as well.
Neat. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff out there. So the whole rainforest is a big thing.
Definitely want to see that.
Yeah, hard to miss. And Forks, if you're a big Twilight fan, I guess that's a place to go.
Yeah, we've been there. My oldest is a big Twilight fan. I'm frankly a big Twilight fan. I'm, you know, way more Team Jacob than Team Edward. But anyway, there is a place out there, a little sort of roadside restaurant that has some of the best like homemade milkshakes I've ever had. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the werewolf milkshake, I think, is better than the vampire milkshake. But they're both pretty good. They know their audience.
Yeah, I've only done the drive through, but my wife and her sister went out there earlier this summer to travel a little bit. They kind of wanted to drive around the peninsula, and so they stopped in there. And they didn't mention the milkshakes though, because I think they're both watching their calorie intake.
Oh man, so. Then these are the wrong milkshakes to get because they are enormous and delicious and very creamy. Anyway, we did the same thing, and we also learned, as many people do when you go to Forks, that many of the locations from the Twilight movies weren't filmed in Forks. They were actually filmed in Oregon. And so like the house that the main character lives in and things like that, you'd have to go to a different state to see. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, it's a kind of a neat little place.
Yeah, if it weren't so far out of the way, but if you're camping, it's fine, right?
We did, yeah. When we did it before, it was sort of a day trip to go out there. We left really early in the morning. We were able to spend the day there, and then we came back long after dark. So it'll be nice to not have it be such a crazy long drive to get out there, because we'll be out there anyway.
Right. You know, that's cool. Yeah. And is this kind of your last hurrah for the summer?
Oh, what's that?
Is this your last hurrah with your family, you know, for the summer? Or
I think so, yes. They start school right at the beginning of September. Mm-hmm. We have had a vacation planned to go to Hawaii that we just pushed back into 2022, like mid 2022. And that was like mm-hmm. our third time pushing it back. And it's, I don't know, I guess the, tourism is such a big industry there that they're sort of unwilling to sort of let us go. If, as long as we're still willing to come, we just want to make sure we can do it at a time when we can hopefully do so more safely. And more importantly, do so with my youngest kids vaccinated.
Right. And which island are you going to?
We're going to the Big Island this time.
Oh, fun, fun. Yeah, actually, I was just talking to my wife about doing something in Hawaii. I like the Big Island. Actually, I went there as a kid when the only structures on the island was at there was an Air Force base there.
And, oh, right in the middle of the island, yeah.
Yeah, and you had to stay at the BEQ, basically, the bachelor's quarters that they had for enlisted folks that would transfer in. My dad was in the Navy, and so we all went there and we could stay. And so everywhere we went, there was nothing except, like the scenery and stuff. And now it's all developed. So
it's, oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very much so. Although there's still a lot of the scenery. There's still a very active volcano, and there's parts of the development that are sort of surprisingly close to the volcano. Yeah. And
well, the fact that there are actual resorts there, that's what I really like to see. So, well, you'll have to let me know when you're going, because maybe we'll do a trip that kind of coincides. I think that'd be fun.
That would be awesome. Absolutely. Yeah.
But we won't bring our kids, though, probably, because they're busy doing their own thing. So,
your kids are at the age where you're like, hey, mom and dad are going to Hawaii. And they're like, all right, well, have a good time, right? My kids are like, mom and dad are going to Hawaii. They're like, we're coming. Especially, I mean, all my kids love beaches, too. So they're like, no, we're coming.
No, of course. Of course. Yeah. And have a beach with warm water. We don't have that in the Pacific Northwest, where you can just go out and it's warm and you're out there all day. It's just, it doesn't happen around here.
I have one of my best friends here that I've made here is Hawaiian, and it is balm for his soul every time he's able to go back home and be at the beach and be in the water there. Mm-hmm. I mean, he said, like you say, right, it's not the same here, and he's able to sort of go back home and enjoy that and see family. And he was able to go just a couple of months ago for the first time in, well over a year. And the change in him was remarkable.
Yeah. As a kid, I lived on Oahu for 4 years.
And, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I went back more recently with my whole family. We went but it was probably like 10 years ago. And I was just shocked the difference of how things were then to they are now. I mean, I literally remember going down the beach at Waikiki and there being nobody else there but us.
Wow.
Yeah, it was during the week and it was kind of a cloudy day, but it just wasn't packed with tourists and hotels and everything. Like we went and looked at the hotel we stayed at before, and it was like a standalone building, and there were some others around, but it was in a less developed area. And now it's just all packed wall to wall everywhere.
Although I, to my surprise, most of the times we've gone to the beaches, and we spend a lot of time on the beaches when we've gone, it's not particularly crowded. And I guess that even though it's all very developed, there's just so many beautiful beaches that you can always have sort of count on a little bit of space for yourself. Mm-hmm. That's really nice.
Yeah. Well, that's what I enjoyed about with Maui is where we went last, is that you can actually get out and there's plenty of places where you can go and there's not a lot of people. So, but the Big Island, that's what I want to try that. And Kauai, those are places I like.
Oh, yeah. 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 And we have, we'll like the Olympic Peninsula trip. It is a thing I am happy to do, even eager to do, but I'm not the trip planner. That is my wife. So she's got the specifics.
See, but, I'm the trip planner. I plan everything. My wife, she just gives the okay and we go.
Enjoys it. That's my role. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, speaking of trips and, camping and things like that, I thought we would talk about a new AP that is out. It came out, I think the first book I got it about a month and a half ago. It's written by this fella named Ron Lundeen. It's called Planetfall.
Ooh, yay! Yes,
yeah, man. So I know about that Horizon, well. Talk about Horizons of the Vast and some of the things that are in this book. Because I think last time we alluded to it, but we really couldn't talk a lot about specifics. And, you know, I'm trying not to look at the main story because I hope to play it. But there's a really a neat bunch of back matter, too, that kind of alludes to some new systems.
Oh, in fact, yes. So Planetfall, the first in the Horizons of the Vast, has my name on the cover. And as with everything I do, my turnover was sort of very capably and ably handled by my wife. Having a PhD in English is in that family is super helpful for editing stuff. But one of the things that she did for me in helping out, we were talking about all of the people that need to go into the settlement, right? All the different colorful characters that you interact with. Some of them were already set in the adventure outline. But not very many. And then I worked with some of the authors of the later volumes to seed some people that they would then need. But that still left an awful lot of room. And so my wife was like, well, can I come up with the other people for you while you're writing the other stuff? I'm like, yeah, you know, go ahead. And she gave me just this super interesting cast of characters that I was then able to use. There's a part of the back matter called Faces of the Settlement, which are all the characters that all the crazy characters that are sort of in the settlement when you land on the planet. And that is almost entirely her. So she got a little bit of writing. My name's on the cover, but she sort of deserves some of the credit. Absolutely.
I was going to say, I don't see her credited here anywhere. What's up with that?
Well, she didn't have any specific part of it that was assigned to her. The next adventure path that we wrote together, she had like specific parts of it assigned to her. Yeah, and so the cover will be Ron Lundeen and Stephanie Lundeen. That's a Pathfinder one. But this one, and come on, it's less than a page. No, I shouldn't minimize her additions. They're really big. They're really big to giving this the kind of this whole adventure, the kind of character that it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, so tell us about this adventure and, you know, this starting point. You know, for this whole adventure path that you've put together here.
Well, this is a whole lot of fun. This has been sort of compared. This has been called Kingmaker in Space. And if you're not familiar with it, one of the most successful first edition Pathfinder adventure paths that we've done is called Kingmaker, where you head into this area that is unclaimed by anybody and sort of forge your own kingdom and you build up cities and take over enemy nations and stuff, and eventually sort of have a great empire that you've built in this section of our world. And we've long looked for a way to do that in Starfinder. But one of the things that is sort of tricky about that is it is easy to fall into sort of a story where you are landing on some planet and you're colonizing it. That is to say, you are taking land and resources away from native people who are there.
Right.
And that's not the kind of story we want to do. Mm-hmm. And so there's a very clever thing about this entire adventure path is, look, hey, here's this planet. It is rich in resources. It is rich in wildlife. And there aren't any intelligent creatures on it. And I think at the beginning, the idea, you know, here in Planetfall, the idea is great. This, we've got a specific charter, a specific section of this planet that has sort of been given to us to explore and build initially small settlements and later big cities and, you know, maybe universities and hospitals and spaceports and stuff. But here's our area. And there's nobody there, no sapient life forms there that we're displacing. And pretty early on, there is some clues to indicate that maybe there being no sapient life here, it is a bad thing. Maybe something has happened, right? Mm-hmm. And especially when you start finding old structures that look to have been hastily abandoned from, you know, centuries ago, you're like, wait a minute, something's gone wrong here. And there's sort of this looming atmosphere of you know, what's this all about that sort of sits over the adventure path, and you get the first tastes of it in in Planetfall, in my adventure. Mm-hmm. All of the rules to build up one of these colonies was written sort of in-house, was written by Jason Keeley, the developer of the adventure path. Mm-hmm. And they weren't done when I started writing, but they were sort of in a done enough form that I was able to take them and sort of count on the rules, you know, sort of looking like what they're. I didn't need to know, for example, how you build the very high end things like I said, you know, like universities and hospitals and spaceports. You're not going to develop that much in the first adventure. In the first adventure, you're sort of just trying to get your initial settlement taken care of. Maybe you start thinking about where a second little settlement's going to go, but the big development goes on later. But all the groundwork for the charter development system is in the back matter of this adventure.
Right. Yeah, I saw that, and it's kind of interesting. I was looking through it, and it gives you instructions on how to create a charter, and they basically frame it as it's the same as like character development.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, so you have certain traits and, you know, certain things and steps you go through. And so I thought that was very creative for doing it. What I wonder then is, would you, as a player, if you are like doing a homebrew, right? Mm-hmm. You would make up, you kind of develop a charter for doing this sort of colonization. And your expectation is that there might be others who are also getting charters, but they could be a lot different from your charter.
Yes, very much so. And one of the things that you're going to need to realize is as you expand and as they expand, mm-hmm. eventually you'll be expanding into each other, right? At some point, you're going to have to interact. And mm-hmm. there are certain things you're going to be good at, and you don't maybe know what they're good at, but it actually seems to me to take the min-max tendency of, oh, let's pick one of these aspects and then just develop it completely to the max and then forsake right. all the other ones. Mm-hmm. If you know that there are other charters and you're going to need to be interacting with them, you might think in advance, maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe that would be a mistake. Maybe what we ought to do is make sure we're at least somewhat well-grounded in everything, because we don't know sort of what abilities they're going to have or what specializations they're going to have. And we don't want them to completely steamroll us because we've ignored the one thing that they're good at. And if that happens to be anything related to interacting with them, either on sort of a diplomatic or, you know, military or sort of a trade type interaction, you don't want to be caught sort of flat-footed by that. You want to make sure that you develop a well-rounded charter. And I really like that from the beginning, you know, there are other charters, because it mm-hmm. sort of leans into maybe we should try to be well-rounded. Maybe we should try to make decisions about what we focus in. And you do that right from the very beginning of the adventure path. But, you know, how you develop is entirely up to you.
Yeah, this reminds me a lot of PC game called Command and Conquer.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with it. You know, so you're sitting there building your forces and your supply chain and all your different things, and you know there's an enemy out there doing the same thing, right? And
exactly.
And you know that certain things are good against certain defenses and so on and so forth. So you have to build a mix and have to move them around. And once you start detecting where they're at, then you have to start changing things up for that. So now the thing with Command and Conquer is it's a pretty fast-paced game, right? It goes pretty quick, whether you're playing against the computer or against somebody else. Now, I'm not familiar with Kingmaker. So for something like this, developing a charter, how long does that take? What's the timeline in the game, and what's the actual play timeline for these things? You know, if you're, you know, there's a bunch of projects in here in the back, advanced projects you can, you know, put together, like an augmentation clinic or an orbital habitat or, you know, a Solarian monastery or whatever. You know, those things seem like they take, you know, months or years at least.
Oh, they do. building things, and this is the case in Kingmaker as well, which was which is very intended to be very long. It would be years to play that out in game. This is much the same. Each you take a series of turns, and each turn is a month of play. So if and that's, I mean, you're doing sort of small nudges every month. So yeah, it absolutely is going to play out over years. That poses a challenge in writing, because whatever dangers are, the dangers kind of have to be able to coast. If the players are like, oh, we need to take a month off, right, to go do our charter turn. And so I've written the adventure that way, where a lot of the dangers are sort of lurking and only some of them are kind of active. Some of them you kind of get into trouble yourself. I don't want to go into spoiler territory, but you've got an area to that you're supposed to be investigating and mapping and looking over. And some of the things will be, oh, when you come into this particular hex, you find a thing, and then at the end of the next charter turn, something happens. And let me use an example that isn't in the adventure, right? Well, you're looking around and you find this mysterious grove of trees. Well, at the end of the next charter turn, walking trees come into your city. They say, you have come to see us and you didn't know we were there, but we were watching and now we want to establish trade with you. It's triggered only because you did that thing, but it's not an immediate need to address. It's something that kind of waits for a little bit.
Interesting. So are you familiar with the Riddick movies?
I am, yes.
Yeah, so that's kind of reminds me of that. So there's like this long-term time bomb that's going, and then, you know, the big rains come in, and then all of a sudden this thing lurking below comes out and devastates everything. So is that the sort of lurking that you'll have here, or are they smaller scale things?
That is, from the Riddick, no, that's actually smaller scale than this is, but I don't want to get into, but I don't want to get into much more than that.
No, that's fine. That's because you talk about walking trees, I'm thinking, okay, that's not so bad. But now, if you're talking, it's bigger than, you know, that sounds pretty extreme.
Yeah, and that's not a thing you find out until much later in the adventure path.
Wow. So the horror, I know you like horror writing. I bet you that comes out in this book then.
Yes, a little bit. And one of the things that is really fun for me for this is that I get to do sort of the fun part of putting out a bunch of weird things or threats, and I don't have to worry about resolving them.
somebody else down the line
is going to resolve them, you know? That's going to be, yeah, Kate Baker, you resolved those way back, you know? Jabari Weathers is on you.
Well, neat. That's kind of exciting. So it sounds like it's a lot of, city building or SimCity kind of stuff. Is there individual player conflict and things like that too? You know, that seems like such small scale compared to the big issues you're dealing with.
Oh, well, yeah, yes, especially in this first adventure, right? Because the opening is there, you're on a ship full of people who have all come here because they're all going to start the new settlement. And this is like that crazy cast of characters I mentioned. But but the PCs are already the leaders, right? You're already the group of you are in charge. You're sort of a council, and you're going to decide what everybody else is going to be doing. That's your job. I mean, they all have their jobs. There's botanists and there's doctors and there's farmers and there's engineers, but your job is to be in charge from the very beginning.
Yeah. So do you need specific professions then? I mean, I saw there's a player guide. So does it give some guidance for that?
Yes, but I don't have any particular, nothing is a mandatory like profession or career or skill. Certainly in my adventure, I don't think in any of them, because the specifics of the people in the settlement will have the expertise that you need. Like you might, we've got this weird thing that is obviously mystical in nature, and it just so happens that none of us have mysticism. Oh, let's go bring it back to the, you know, the spellcaster back in the settlement, this person that we met.
I was thinking more like, you know, project management skills and leadership skills.
I mean, your job, frankly, your job is to be an adventurer, right? The issue is you're like, oh, well, you've got this settlement and it's, oh, I don't even know. It's like, you know, 80 hexes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And you pick right from the very beginning. And this I think is about the least spoilery I can be, because it's mm-hmm. literally the thing that happens very first. You're in orbit above the planet. Here is your area. You know, here's sort of this map that you're given. Where are we going to put our settlement? You know, your chief advisor is like, there are three good places. This one looks like it's great for minerals. This one looks like it's great for getting food. This one looks like great for your supply. And, you know, maybe the one that's great for minerals isn't so great about food. And the one for, you know, so on. So it's sort of right from the beginning. You're like, well, you know, here's one of three options. How do we want to start? And that, once you're sort of landed there, you explore the whole area, but you could be exploring it from kind of the north, or you could be exploring it from kind of the southwest, or you could be, depending on where you decided to start. And that's a little bit of a challenge to me as a writer, but really cool as a player, because you have got pretty much ultimate freedom, because there's no way of knowing exactly where you're going to start. And there's certainly no way of knowing, well, which hex are you going to go to first, then second, then third? We don't know. And so there's a lot of things.
You had to detail like 1,000 hexes then, huh?
Oh, no. There are about, gosh, I don't know. What is this? I can count. 7 times about 10, about 70 hexes. Okay. But there's not something in every single hex.
Right.
And in fact, I'm not even going to tell you how many hexes do have stuff in them, because that's spoilery, right? But I mean, there's certainly enough to be really robust adventure in the exploration part. And the entire adventure is sort of in two halves. The first half is, here is a bunch of stuff that goes on in your settlement. And the second half is, here's a bunch of stuff that goes on in the different hexes as you explore, and they play off each other, right? There's things that you can't find in the wilderness until something has happened in the settlement first. And there's things that can't happen in your settlement until you've been to the right place in the wilderness. So there's a lot of kind of going back and forth in between. Which I think means, from once you, I mean, obviously the choice you start in already, you've picked one of three things. You're not going to be running it the same as another table that's running it. But then where you decide to go and what you trigger and the order that things happen in is going to vary quite wildly from table to table. And I think that is going to be a real joy of this. I would have said there aren't a lot of people who play through adventure paths more than once until I met you, John, and I know that you've done so.
Yeah.
And this is of all the adventure paths that Paizo's done for Starfinder, this is the one that is going to be very different depending on table to table to table.
Mm-hmm. Now, it sounds really neat. I can think of, you know, like a whole bunch of different books and movies that kind of fit this whole colonizing thing. And I'm trying not to read the core material here, but I do notice that you do have a Borg ship that you start in when you're settling, though. That's really odd.
This was my idea, and this is, I don't know, it's not even necessarily a hidden spoiler, but it is typical in adventure paths that you have a starship that has a tier that's the same as your party level, right? And for this one, the starship that I was going to be asked to write was the ship that you are going to use to touch down with all of your settlers in it. So already it's got to be really big, because you're bringing a bunch of people, you bring several dozen people and everything you need to start your settlement on a new planet. So it's already, I'm already thinking it's got to be super duper big. And I was talking to Jason, I'm like, there's no tier one ship you can make that is big enough to be this. And by the way, Jason, you don't even get into a starship fight in my whole adventure, because it's all taking place on the planet.
Don't tell people. Don't tell people that.
But it means that the starting ship that you have, can be a much higher tier.
Right. But it's a big box.
It does look like a great big box, as you might expect, because whole chunks of the box come off and become buildings in the settlement.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. Except you can have round buildings in the future, I think, if you want.
You can. I don't know that any of them are. One of the things that was kind of neat on this, that I was able to see flipping through my copy, is the in Pathfinder, we started taking full page maps that were like a bunch of different areas, and then just breaking the maps up and putting them like, here's a little tiny corner with this area. And then you turn two pages later, here's another map, you know, so you don't have to keep flipping back and forth to a full page map. That's confusing. This one has all the little maps split up to be all the different areas where you are.
I think that's going to be so much easier to run.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed on the cover, there's somebody who's looks like they're using a crutch. Is that right?
Yeah, this is actually, this guy is your advisor. I said your advisor tells you at the beginning, there's three. Yeah. And one of the points about this advisor is, hey, we have this guy who is going to be your advisor. We're always looking to increase our representation.
Yeah.
And you know, the diversity of our sort of cast of characters. And this one, Jason decided this guy has some sort of physical impairment that requires that he use a crutch in order to walk around. He's got sort of limb problems that technology hasn't been able to solve. So he's got like leg braces and a crutch. And the important thing is, this guy has leg braces and a crutch, and it's never a plot point, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's not a situation where he's like, oh, I can't climb up this cliff because I'm disabled and my legs don't work. No, you can do everything else anybody can do. Mm-hmm. He just happens to be the same way somebody might happen to be, a woman as opposed to a man, or might happen to be somebody who happens to be very short rather than very tall. This is a guy who happens to have a disability, but it's not defining of his inabilities in the course of the adventure. And the decision to put him on the cover, I think, was kind of neat.
Yeah, that's why I'm commenting on it, because I think this is the first time I've seen this sort of representation on the cover of one of the APs.
I think you're absolutely right. I don't know if we have any of the Starfinder iconics that have a disability similar to that. We do have on the Pathfinder side, Guns and Gears. We're coming out with the two new classes, the Gunslinger and the Inventor. And the Inventor is an amputee. He's got a prosthetic limb. And he's our first iconic with that particular kind of disability, increasing our representation. Doing that. Well, I also point out on the cover, the big purple monster.
Yes.
That's awesome. I made that. And when we were talking about populating this planet with what sort of creatures are there, I sort of wanted to go in an Avatar, The Last Airbender kind of way. If you've ever seen that, a lot of the little animals, they're actually just combinations of other animals, right? So you've got cute little ducks that happen to have a turtle shell. And things like that. I'm like, I want to do the same thing. So you've got this big purple monster, which kind of looks like an elk, but kind of looks like a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's because it's a sort of a mush of both. And then through the adventure, you're like, and here's this, you know, frog that's got a turtle shell. And here's every one of the monsters that you see is actually just like a combination of two kinds of animals. And I'm pleased that I was able to lean into that kind of hard, and it persisted through the adventure so well that when Jason had to replace a creature that I had included in my turnover, he replaced it with a kind of creature that looks like two other creatures mushed together. I'm like, yes, carried all the way through.
Nice. Well, I'm really excited to play this. I don't know when I'm going to be able to fit it in my schedule for playing. It's in the queue. But that queue is pretty full at this point. So,
well, that's mutual. Well, we've got, once we get through Dawn of Flame, we're in the last adventure there, but we're going to keep going, right? The plan is to keep on going through Devastation Arc. So it'll be a little while before that opens up.
Yeah. So after Devastation Arc, I'm thinking maybe you might be interested in running this.
Who even knows what's going to be out by then?
I know. That's years. No, that's not even that. I mean, it's really not that long. It's like the summer, probably.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. Well, it depends on how long Devastation Arc takes us, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I don't have a good sense of the pacing of the first two. I have a little bit of sense of the pacing of the third one from the playtest we did
right.
of it. But yeah, I've skimmed those, but I it's probably getting to the time where I need to read them in sufficient detail to be able to go with them.
Right. Well, I look forward to it regardless.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited to hear people start to get online and tell their stories about what happened mm-hmm. because I can compare them to all the different ways that I thought it might unfold. And I know it could unfold in all these different ways. I mean, just that variety is very exciting to me.
Well, I hope you have a good time going out to the Olympic Peninsula and maybe seeing forks in the whole rainforest.
Maybe so. We'll see. I'll be able to report the next time.
I'm John.
And I'm Ron. And this is Digital Divination.